Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here for this 17th of December. We are halfway through, even further than halfway through December, and as we get to this date, we are also just one full week away from Christmas, something that we've been talking about for several weeks here on Faith Radio Mornings, of course, because we are a show part of the Faith Radio Network that does cover the news of the day, but we are always going to cover it from the perspective of following Jesus in this world, and this is that last week before we celebrate the birth of our Savior that happened so many years ago, but it's still an ongoing kingdom that has no end. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, who I am off-site right now, but Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault are in studio, and of course our friend on Monday mornings that does join us on the Faith Radio Network many Mondays to talk about the news from a Christian perspective is Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post. It's a great news site. You know that I often advocate for it. If you're listening this morning, to go to ChristianPost.com and see so many of the top of the mind news articles covered, not from a conservative or liberal slant so much, but most importantly from the slant of the kingdom. Good morning, Brandon.
Good morning, Peter. Merry Christmas to you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, I was mindful of the fact that in this last week of Advent, and we've been talking about it this weekend in our family, Brandon, with some of our friends, that we're still waiting in an Advent kind of way for Jesus to return again. And I think back to this time, you know, so many thousands of years ago, where the voice of God had not been active in Israelite society for 400 years. And though they had the promises of the coming of the Messiah, that I'm assuming a lot of people generationally lost hope that it was ever going to happen. The world was bleak, it was difficult for them, and then suddenly John the Baptist emerges out of the wilderness and proclaims that the king is coming. And now we're in this 2,000-year waiting period for him to come again. And I don't know about you, Brandon, but I see these headlines, there's so much news, there's so much kind of craziness in our world, and it does make me wonder, is this prophecy, when Jesus said he was going to return again, is that ever going to come true?
Well, that's the tension that we live in, the now but not yet kingdom. Jesus inaugurated the kingdom when he was walking the earth, and we now get the glorious opportunity to co-labor with God, to partner with him to restore and heal the earth. I mean, obviously we're not God, but it is that tension, because, yes, you're right, the world is fraught with so many problems and ills and evils. But, yes, we wait, but he is coming. We know his word is true.
Yeah, and you know, as we cover the news, you and I, and we talk about it so many Monday mornings like this in Faith Radio Mornings, you reference that now, not yet tension. We're not here just to cover the facts of the news, but to talk about it from that kingdom perspective. Is it possible, Brandon, with the news, to actually shine a light as we're talking about just news stuff?
You know, you have no other choice but to shine a light on it. I know I sometimes, when I cover some of the issues that I cover, it can be hard, it can be very bleak indeed to see, you know, where are you, God, in this? This is just so horrible and so evil. And yet, that is the work of the kingdom, to expose the truth and to shine a light on the darkness and bring work toward justice. And so that, I mean, it can be hard, certainly, but what other choice do we have? I mean, Jesus told us, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world. And that's not a trite, cutesy phrase. He really meant it when he said it. And so, yes, that might mean we have to face some difficult things and indeed look at things that it may be very hard to see God in it. But if we don't shine a light on, if we don't do any of that, we know it's just going to overwhelm us. So I just see the difficult and the easy things. I mean, you have just to learn to see from God's lens, from his perspective, and it makes everything just that much better.
Well, I love that you come on and you do just that with us so often on Faith Radio Mornings. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, I know the first headline you and I will get into is the fact that two prominent Christian groups are now backing the addition of sexual orientation and gender identity as categories in our federal non-discrimination laws. And I'll be curious to get your take on that. How do we balance all of the idea of standing firm in our Christian faith, but also understanding the law of the land? So more with Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Oh, come, oh, come.
You know, Brandon, I got to admit, I kind of chuckle every time I hear that particular walk-up music. Again, remind our listeners how in the world we came to this point that Pavarotti is how you were introduced into the show.
Well, because I like to sing opera every once in a while. Who doesn't?
Yeah. I find that I fail miserably on any level. But opera, I mean, can you actually pull off some of the notes, Brandon?
No, you know, I mean, if I'm warmed up enough, sure.
All right. Well, we expect a YouTube video sent to our Facebook page here in Faith Radio Morning shortly of you doing opera, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, at some point, maybe we'll just have to arrange that. So, all right.
Chatting with Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post this morning on Faith Radio Mornings for the 17th of December. And Brandon, this article really got my attention for a wide variety of the implications involved. And I referenced it before the break, but the National Association of Evangelicals and the Council of Christian Colleges and Universities, two pretty prominent Christian groups in our country, have said that they support the addition of sexual orientation and gender identity as categories in the non-discrimination law of the federal government. And they get, in exchange, religious exemptions for Christians. Kind of walk us through what's happening here, and then you and I can chat about the implications of that.
Well, it is a rather significant development, and it's one that has really divided a lot of people who are like-minded on a lot of things. As you indicated, the National Association of Evangelicals and the Christian Colleges Association here, the CCCU, has indeed, I think the reasoning is that my best read on it is that they realize that in light of recent court decisions and just the way culture is going, and we see increased hostility toward religious liberty in some areas, that this is perhaps the best way to compromise. Whereas those who oppose this see the fact that, well, the First Amendment guarantees religious liberty, and to they argue that the sort of secular progressive LGBT crowd does not negotiate in good faith, and that this is just a beachhead and they're going to gobble up religious liberty. And so they're saying that this is a disaster because this is essentially a capitulation to greater government power over religious institutions, colleges in particular. We're going to have to wait and see what all happens. I think part of the biggest issue is that, as we've discussed this on your show before, particularly when it comes to the whole concept of gender identity, no one has ever really defined what that term means. Hmm. I mean, we don't, we have historically preserved, and women had to fight for this, particularly in the feminist movement, but discrimination on the basis of sex, which referred to biology, the human body. Well, gender identity completely, as I see it, certainly as a Christian, undermines all of those sex-based protections, especially for women, again, because they have been historically held down on the basis of their biology, particularly their reproductive capacity. So this whole concept of gender identity, which, again, has not ever really been defined, and the best definition that you can give for it is a discomfort or the comfort level with one's body. I don't know how you can protect both, because the two things are really contradictory. And so to lend credence to somehow giving this, giving gender identity, recognizing that as an objective category, frankly, I think it undermines the entire structure of the law, because it deems the human body essentially irrelevant. And so there's all kinds of philosophical issues that I see coming from this agreement that the CCCU and the NAE struck. But at the same time, those who are supporting it say this does not mean that people are sort of in any way compromising moral theology. So there's good people on both sides of the debate. I think it's going to just have to – we're going to wait to see how it all is hashed out. But people are feeling very strongly on this one.
Well, you make a very good point too, Brandon, in the sense of the activism involved with this, that it sounds like a reasonable negotiation between the two sides at this point in time. But the very nature of activism is something that is seeking out things that are either real or perceived
right.
in terms of justice and mm-hmm. slights towards justice. And so I can see a scenario where a year or two or three, this is sort of just normalized and some
right.
activists come back and try to revisit this.
That's always how it goes. And again, we want to have compassion and respect for people who believe differently in a pluralistic democracy. We try to do that. But as Christians, I don't think we can ignore the ever-growing forces of the sexual revolution. I mean, that hasn't stopped. And like it or not, that revolution is fundamentally opposed to our faith. And if we care about liberty for everyone, we have to do our best to resist it, while at the same time loving the person in front of us who may be proponents of it. That's talk about tension in the kingdom, as we were speaking earlier. That's a hard thing to do, but it's one we're called to as Christians.
Yeah, is that part of this conversation for me, Brandon, is so difficult, because if you can define the gender categories, then you do have to apply the laws of freedom relative to our land. And it's one of those tensions you describe, that not all things that are American values are necessarily kingdom values. And so it mm-hmm. kind of is part and parcel. We had a story on last week of somebody in an Illinois government center put in a statue that depicted something about Satan right next to a Christmas tree. And they mm-hmm. said, this is religious freedom. At the end of the day, if we're going to be a religiously free society, and this is how gender gets defined, you can't, or a civil society like that, you can't just say, well, we're going to pick these and these to be free, and the other ones we're not.
It's true. I certainly didn't like seeing that satanic symbol in the Illinois government building either, but that is what we deal with here in America, because we allow whatever religion. Now, I think there's an argument to be made that I'm a big fan of that Scientology series on A&E. I think the government should maybe take a closer look at when you have cults doing horrific things like that. That yes, we have religious freedom, but we don't tolerate everything and under the sun, particularly when doctrine calls for people to be destroyed. But yeah, it means that we allow many religions to have their space in the public arena. That's what we believe as Americans, and I think there's even a grid for that within the Christian faith. Obviously, you're not going to be bowing down to any other faith other than Jesus, but in a public forum, those things are to be allowed, and I think you can make a case for that even with our own faith.
Talking with Brandon Showalter this morning on Monday morning, as we often do here on Faith Radio Mornings at the Christian Post, talking about some of the important news headlines of the day. And Brandon, one more thought on this before you run to break, and that is the idea that, and I know my students talk about this a lot, that if somebody wants to define themselves in a certain way, or they want to get married to the same gender and there's love involved, why should there be any objection to that? And Brandon, I think part of it is that when we begin to embrace these things, that the possibility of these things becomes present and normalized in our culture. And all of us, but young people in particular, now see any number of possibilities that if they didn't exist, that they wouldn't try to define themselves. And I'll say this, my young people are very confused these days about all the possibilities that they have by which to define themselves.
Yes, we do no one. We do no one any good when we don't tell them the truth. And when we talk, even the word gender, I mean, how many are there on Facebook now? Like 57 or something?
Yeah,
57. It's like Heinz ketchup. You know, there's however many genders are available. Frank, it's psychologically abusive. I mean, I've even taken to stopping saying the word gender in my own life, because really it's a lot of times what people, when they say gender, they mean sex. And historically that's been the definition. We've used it rather interchangeably with sex. There's male and female, and the presence of these genetic abnormalities don't negate the presence of the binary, the sexual binary. We are a sexually dimorphic species, and so for young people, yes, tell them the truth. And I don't blame them for the confusion, because there's been so much that's been sown into our society, as you point out. But we have to tell the truth at all costs, and even when it's offensive. And because without truth, there can be no order, and there can be no stability, and there's only chaos. And I do think all this gender madness, we are going to see a tremendous backlash from it, because so many people being harmed by it, so many people. It can't last. It's unfortunately, it's been weaponized to a great degree in our culture, but this is madness. I mean, I think there's ways to challenge gender norms without believing that you are the opposite sex, or that you're some confused version of yourself that you have to define yourself by. You know, it's possible to teach little boys to be kind and teach girls to be strong. We don't have to gender those things, if you will. But tell the truth at all costs, really, especially on this issue, because this is where the enemy, I believe, is trying to confuse and, frankly, destroy the next generation, but even people my age and older. we've got to get this right.
It's well said. That's Brandon Showalter again at the Christian Post. Brandon, we'll take a short break. Come back. We'll stay within this stream of conversation, this vein of what we're discussing. And it's one of the things that I wondered if it might ever happen. And that's as we begin to identify and define ourselves by our sense of attraction and sense of self, does that then rule out people who might be attracted to children or some of these really horrible things? And sure enough, we're starting to see some of that. So we'll get into a difficult but important topic more next with Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. About 23 minutes past the hour here on the 17th of December, and we're chatting with Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post. This is such a great job covering such a wide variety of topics from a Christian standpoint. Brandon, as we think about this time next week, it's Christmas Eve, heading into Christmas Day. Do you have any specific plans together yet? Are you hosting Christmas, going somewhere? What are you up to next week?
Just going down to visit the family where I'm from in Virginia, and going to hang and chill and just take a break from the news.
Yeah. So, and when I mean, you have to be in the news cycle day in and day out. Can you take 48, 72 hours off and not be way behind in everything?
It's hard to decompress sometimes, but it's essential that I do it just for my own mental health. It does. It's really, everybody needs a break, and especially when you're in an industry where things are always breaking and things are always happening. You do have to learn to just separate oneself from it.
Yeah, that's part of, I can't imagine being part of the news if you're not part of the kingdom at the same time in which
right.
You can take that break.
So. Well, I understand. Journalists are a jaded bunch. I mean, I'll just tell you, I understand why many of them are very disillusioned people.
Absolutely.
But the kingdom is everything. If I didn't have that, indeed, it would be hard to continue.
Well, we've been having some conversations that aren't always easy, of course, and are confusing, mm-hmm. and I think touch many families listening today that I'm sure have family members that are wondering about gender
right.
and sense of attraction. And, Brandon, it's mm-hmm. one of those things is that maybe we can wrap up our time this morning talking for a few minutes about this idea that when we define ourselves by our sense of attraction and when we get our fundamental identity from that, it sounds horrifying from maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago, but it's not that many steps to say, well, hey, if I'm attracted to children and the horrors of pedophilia, that's just central to my identity. And sure enough, there's a pretty well-established sexuality and culture academic journal that came out recently and talked about being defined by your sense of pedophilia attraction.
Yeah, this was a really disturbing article that I wrote. There's the academic journal that you mentioned made the decision to approve, and it's a peer-reviewed journal, an article by a convicted child pornographer that argued that pedophilia was a sexual orientation like any other, and it argued for the normalization of the practice of adult child sex. Now, that probably horrifies your listeners to no end, but I'm here to tell you today that the unthinkable is upon us. This is always how these things start. It sounds like it's so extreme, it'll never become normalized. That'll never happen. Well, I'm here to tell you, it's starting to happen more and more and more. Peter, I don't know anything more important than being watchful and aware and, to resist those who would say that it is fine for adults to have sex with children. There are people out there like this man, and there are others, if you read the article I mentioned too at the bottom, where this is starting to happen more and more, where people are slowly, gradually, what they'll do is they'll just start to study it and examine it and analyze it as though this is something that we really need to explore. No. No, no, no. But yes, you're right. It's when you start to define yourself by false things and you embrace forms of perversion, it just begets new forms of perversion. It doesn't just stop. There's not a stopping point to this. Unless we're anchored, and certainly as Christians we believe, unless we're anchored to a higher truth, to God's word, we would say, chaos is the result. There's just no stopping it. You open this door and it's Pandora's box. Mm. And though people think this is not going to ever happen, well, I have news. It's upon us, and we've got to resist. And you know, I think it's oftentimes just it's a gradual thing. People don't realize how there's the example of the frog that's in boiling water, and you turn the heat up just very slowly, and before it's too late, he's cooked. Well, these academics and people who argue for the normalization of pedophilia, they are cunning individuals, just like actual predators. They know how to sort of get into people's heads and slowly change the terms of the debate and reframe everything such that what was once unthinkable slowly becomes the status quo. Christians, be watchful. Be aware. Don't let this happen.
Yeah, it's such a good point, Brandon, and in the sense that I remember watching the TV show Friends for the first time in the mid-1990s, and all of that material was horrifying and scandalous, and we couldn't possibly imagine that people would say that. And that is tame now relative to where we've been as a country.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you know, I read a study, I forget where this was, but it rings true to me. Don't quote me on this, but I do remember reading this years ago that over the course of that decade where that show was on the air, and I've seen a bunch of episodes, it's a lot of the comedic writing is just genuinely hilarious. I mean, not everything is dirty in that show, so it's mixed in with some actual funny content. But I think all six of those characters over the course of a decade, I think had slept with 250 people if you actually went through and counted. I really think so. And even if that's not the exact number, it did normalize a whole heck of a lot of things that when that's your life is not sipping lattes at Central Perk and wearing really fancy, nice clothes in a fun apartment in New York. Your life is dysfunctional when you do what those friends did. And so, yeah, I think it conditioned people into accepting a lot of things that, yes, were indeed once taboo, but today are normal. And so the devil likes to use humor to try and dull our senses to a lot of things that he'd like us to believe. Yes, we can laugh and have fun. Christians, just again, be watchful. Be watchful.
Yeah, well said, Brandon. Well, Brandon, thanks so much for joining us this past year. I know that we'll have next week off for Christmas and everything, but Merry Christmas and very much looking forward to catching up after the new year.
Thank you, Peter. Merry Christmas to you, and best of all to the whole team at Faith Radio.
I appreciate that. We'll take a short break here for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News, and we'll be joined by Dr. Adam Carrington of Hillsdale College. We'll talk about some of the politics and judiciary matters that are happening in our country here next on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, I see a headline here that evergreen Christmas trees may be becoming a thing of the past, at least for some in the Los Angeles area, where Culver City Outlet Platform has partnered with Highland Park's Ponderosa Cactus to create a holiday cacti wonderland, a lot where people can buy cacti for use as Christmas trees. The Holiday Cacti Wonderland is open until December 23rd, so if you still don't have a Christmas tree, I'm certain that Amazon Prime can get you one within about 2 hours. It would just be a cactus instead of an evergreen.
We don't always feel God's presence, but that doesn't mean he's not there. This is Jim Garlow. Maybe you've asked the Lord questions like, "Where were you, God? Where were you, God, when I lost my baby in the womb? Where were you, God, when my mom and dad got sick? Where were you when my marriage went south? Where were you when I got bypassed at work by people who don't have near my abilities? Where were you when my children rebelled and rejected the faith? Where were you, God, when our culture turned away from you?" In this broken world, those things do happen, but none of that diminishes God's omnipresence. Psalm 11 assures us, "The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven." Combine that with his promise, "I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you." And you can be sure of his presence. This is Jim Garlow. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Faith Radio Mornings here at about 20 minutes before the top of the hour on the 17th of December, and that music means that Dr. Adam Carrington, professor of politics at Hillsdale College and regular contributor to Faith Radio Mornings, joins us to talk a little bit about the news from a political standpoint. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. How are you doing, Peter?
Well, I'm doing well, but like you and some of the emails back and forth between us last night, it sometimes feels like my head is going to explode if I continue to watch the news. There's just too many things to keep up with these days.
Yes, the fact that we have 24-hour news cycles turns into about 30-minute news segments. And it seems that, yes, yeah, it's very hard to keep up. In fact, I've even had my wife every once in a while saying, oh, did you hear about this story that I probably should have known about? And, you know, grading finals, doing things for you know, doing at my actual job. sometimes I can't even keep up with all of it myself.
Well, and certainly, too, and you reference this is time of the year for finals and get a little break as a professor from all of that. And yet, if you turn on the news for half a second, it's hard to know, is the Cohen stuff more important? Is Schumer and Pelosi and Trump's, you know, crazy optics? What's the most important thing to even talk about these days? Because it just seems to spin one thing to another. As you've sort of watched the news in the last week since we've had a chance to chat, is there any one thing that really stands out and say, boy, this one really matters more than some of the other ones?
I think that it is hard to narrow it down, like you said, because in some of it's going to be how it plays out. But I think long term, the thing that's going to be more interesting is going to be maybe the Pelosi-Schumer showdown with Trump. And I think because you're seeing a little bit about how the next 2 years are going to be in government relations between Congress and the presidency. But also, I think it's the beginning of both sides trying to stake out their ground for the 2020 election as well, where both will be going saying, you should give us unified control of the government. I mean, that said, I think the Cohen thing is not far behind because I think it massively ups the chances that the Democrats will be, whether they want to or not, might be pushed by their base into impeachment proceedings once all the findings come out. So it's a pretty close race, but I think maybe the Schumer-Trump showdown might be more important given the political ramifications for all elections going forward up to 2020.
Yeah, let's go there first then in terms of the Trump, Pelosi, Schumer. I don't know if you caught the clip of the 10, 12 minutes or whatever it was as they sat in the Oval Office and discussed some of these political ideas, including the wall. And I've never seen anything like it, Adam, between the three of them, where it was sort of just this raw footage of them arguing about funding for the wall and whether the wall should be built and whether the government should be shut down. Kind of take our listeners through what happened between the three of them.
Well, typically these kinds of meetings, to the degree that they're made public, are really supposed to be attempts by both sides to sort of put on a good face, and often trying to put forward an idea of civility and responsibility and competence. It doesn't usually degenerate into this, but of course we live in sort of strange times where, of course, these kinds of conversations with this kind of tone happen and probably happen frequently, but not usually in front of the cameras. And what you really had was both sides playing to their base as far as talking points, both sides showing that on the issue of immigration there is a wide gulf between them, and both wanting to put forward not just put forward the tactical position of being tough, no compromising, and trying to get good sound bites for their own side. And I think that's really what you saw, the president pushing that we need a border wall that needs to be part of the funding for the new government spending procedures that are going through, and the other side saying, no, border security is enough, we don't need to give any more. And I think that, like I said earlier, I think that's just a preview for the tone and the jostling policy-wise that's going to go between the two. And it was quite extraordinary. It was rancorous. Chuck Schumer refused to even look at the president. Nancy Pelosi was very combative, as the president was as well. This really was down in the dirt, down in the mud sort of politics. Out in front of the open for everyone to see. It had a bit of a reality TV element to it. It's almost as if you're watching you know, these TV shows that show dysfunctional relationships. This is certainly one of them.
Well, I was just mesmerized by the fact that the president, on one hand, could seem to be complimenting the two of them, and on the other hand, just ripping them apart. It made my head spin, Adam. It really did feel like a reality show.
Well, and the complimenting, the president, one thing he has with Chuck Schumer is they're both New Yorkers. And the president has at times donated to Democrats, at times to Republicans. So at times he's actually had a decent relationship with Schumer. It's deteriorated since he became a Republican candidate and president. But I think what you're seeing is the rawness of it. I think you're right to point out that if we have conversations with others that aren't scripted and planned, they often have a lot of incongruity to them, because on one hand, all of them do want some kind of deal, but they want a deal that keeps their sides happy, that adheres to their principles. And rather than working all that out behind closed doors, you're seeing it right out in the open.
And where are we with this wall building at this point? Because when I listened to the three of them chat, and President Trump was reflecting on the progress made in the wall, he made it sound like in parts we had this 50-foot completely impenetrable barrier throughout much of southern United States. Where are we with this wall development?
This is where the president, I think, has a little unwisely tried to have it both ways. On one hand, he's attacked Democrats for not letting him build the wall, not giving him funding to build the wall, and sometimes Republicans as well for not going along. On the other hand, he's claimed that the wall's already being built. And it's trying to do two things. One, it's trying to blame the enemy, his opponents, but also not look like the enemy has enough power over him to thwart him. But the real fact of it is, and he's gotten some significant pushback from people like Ann Coulter and some others on the right that are very immigration's their big issue, Tucker Carlson as well, that the wall hasn't been built. There really has been not one foot of the wall that's been built according to the specifications or according to the promises of the president. All he's really pointing to is some of the fencing that already existed or is already under construction has been revitalized, it's been strengthened, but nothing like the big, beautiful wall that he's mentioning has been put up. And I think the president, like I said, he's trying to have it both ways, and he's starting to get some extra pushback from those who not only loved him as being a stricter border enforcement guy, but loved him for his toughness, are starting to say, well, if you really look at the fact, you've not really shown toughness or strength on border security on this essential campaign promise. There's other things he's done, I think, that have made them happy. But, the status of the wall is there is no wall. And until there's more funding for it, there probably won't be, and that's going to be interesting to see who digs in their heels more this time in the showdown.
Well, one more piece that came out of the interchange with the three of them was that the president said that he would fully own a budget shutdown if there isn't the idea of wall funding within the budget. And, Adam, is it significant to shut down the federal government that way? I remember it's happened in the past, and I don't remember a huge change in life, at least for the first month or two. I'm sure many federal employees are deeply impacted by that. But how significant is this threat that you actually can get some leverage out of it?
At first, it won't be much. If you want to go visit a federal park, if you plan that as part of your vacation, you might not be able to. It will have a significant impact on federal employees who get furloughed and then not paid. Essential government services, it's not as if the military is going to all go home and all the Navy ships are going to come in. It's not as if basic FBI work or CIA work is going to end. But what might happen eventually, if it goes on long enough, you might start to see cutbacks in the Social Security Administration employees, meaning people that are looking for their Social Security checks might have more trouble working out claims, things like that. That's when it could really start to affect a lot of Americans. But that would take a while. It would have to take a while for the government to start shutting down those things. So it won't affect a ton of Americans at first. And really what it'll be is it'll be a media blame game. And what's interesting is the president said, "I won't blame you, Chuck, for it." How that'll play out. Typically, Republicans have done worse and gotten more accusations against them and come out the worst on these shutdowns. It'll be interesting to see if that's what happens here, because the president's thinking, I want to take credit for the shutdown because it shows I'm tough, it shows I really want immigration reform. The question will be, beyond his base, will a large enough segment of the American people believe that this is worth shutting down the government on. The polling is ambiguous, and I would say we won't really know till it actually happens whether the American people would really be behind it or not. Polls right now show probably not.
That's Dr. Adam Carrington of Hillsdale College. We're talking about the political scene. And, Adam, take a short break. When we come back, let's change back to the other topic of conversation, and that is whether the hush money that the president paid to two women with whom he had affairs actually violated campaign finance law. So more to come with Adam Carrington next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here at about 7 minutes before the top of the hour. Adam, I know it's College Bowl football season, and I know your beloved Buckeyes did not make it into the national tournament there, but are you still sort of walking around thumping your chest in Michigan as your Buckeyes took them down?
That was quite satisfying. In fact, I know Ohio State's done very well against that team up north, as we call them lately, but it never gets old, because I remember times where we took a thumping, and we were actually surprised. We thought Michigan would come out and play a lot better, and Ohio State just had a great game plan, and go Bucks. We were quite happy.
I love it. Well, one more topic of conversation here before we wrap things up this morning, and that has to do with the idea that the National Enquirer coordinated with the campaign to make some of these hush money payments on behalf of President Trump and his lawyer, Michael Cohen. Was this illegal? Is this something — I know the president is trying to spin it by saying this sort of thing happens in private enterprise all the time. It had nothing to do with the campaign.
That's going to be the question. You said, does it have anything to do with the campaign? And a lot of the precedent for this is, if anyone remembers, former vice presidential candidate John Edwards, a Democrat senator from North Carolina, who also paid money to a mistress to partly cover up the fact that he had had an affair and actually a child with the woman. Whether this is the same thing, he was brought on campaign finance charges. He was a hung jury. He had mostly a hung jury that couldn't determine one way or another. Here's going to be the question. It's illegal if these payments were made in coordination with the campaign to hush or suppress news or hush or suppress a person in order to influence the campaign. And I would say that there is a lot more evidence right now from what we've seen that this was done directly to influence the campaign, that it was done without any disclosure, and therefore that it was done in violation of campaign finance laws. The question is going to be what people want to do with it. But even people who have been more defensive of the president, Andrew McCarthy being an example, I think has made a decent case that this looks more like illegal campaign activity and an attempt to push a lot of money around under the table to buy people's silence, to buy people's not getting everything out to the American people. So it seems a little more serious than the John Edwards case from my read, at least as far as the evidence.
And Adam, we have just a little bit more than a minute left here. I'm just going to go ahead and take a wild stab that the Democratic leadership in the House is going to make an issue of this after the new year.
They'll have to. I think what's interesting is Nancy Pelosi really pushed Democratic candidates to downplay Trump impeachment during the election. She really pushed them, and they followed, to run on Medicare expansion, on other social and economic programs. But I think that if this evidence comes out the way it's looking, it's going to be very hard for them not to at least make this much more of an issue going forward and try to even consider the question of impeachment. I was a little less convinced that that might happen before this, and I think now it looks much more likely if the reports come out eventually. We're going to have to wait till they do, but if they come out as they're looking, that this is going to be a major issue and a major question the Democratic Party, Republicans, and the American people are going to have to ask themselves.
Well, and certainly you and I, I'm sure we'll talk about this after the new year. It's going to be top of the mind for all of us. I really appreciate your time in 2018, Adam. It's just so fun to chat with you on Mondays like this about the political scene, and I hope you have a great Christmas ahead.
Hope you all do, too. It's a great gift that you let me on time after time. I hope for more in 2019.
That sounds great. Thanks, Adam. We'll take a break here and wrap up our first hour of the show and preview what's coming up in hour two for Faith Radio Mornings. Well, Monday mornings are never easy to get up for any of us. I get that. But I sure appreciate having Brandon Showalter and Adam Carrington on in the first hour, just talking about so many of these news headlines, but doing so from a Christian standpoint and giving us a sense of settledness and anchoredness as we begin our week here. The last week before Christmas, we'll be playing O Come, O Come, Emmanuel all throughout the week as representative of the waiting and coming for the King. And up next in hour two on Faith Radio Mornings, I'll be joined first by Colin Hansen of the Gospel Coalition, and we are going to review the top 10 theological stories of 2018.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.